There can be no doubt, at least as far as Middle East policy is concerned, that IPAC is the voice of America. IPAC stands for the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and in case there is any doubt about its aims, its subtitle is America's Pro-Israel Lobby. There can also be no doubt that its policies put considerations for the State of Israel first, over and above any considerations for the safety and security of the United States and its citizens. The motives and aims behind the establishment and growth of IPAC are boldly stated on its website. For more than half a century, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee has worked to help make Israel more secure by ensuring that American support remains strong. From a small pro-Israeli public affairs boutique in the 1950s, IPAC has grown into a 100,000-member national grassroots movement described by the New York Times as the most important organization affecting America's relationship with Israel. Did you detect anywhere in that paragraph a mention of any benefit for Americans? I didn't, so let's see if there is any such mention in the next paragraph. As America's leading pro-Israel lobby, IPAC works with both Democratic and Republican political leaders to enact public policy that strengthens the vital U.S.-Israel relationship. With the support of its members nationwide, IPAC has worked with Congress and the executive branch on numerous critical initiatives, from securing vital foreign aid for Israel to passing legislation aimed at stopping Iran's illicit nuclear program. You should note that the word vital was used twice in that paragraph, but the question that Americans should be asking themselves is, vital for whom? Is it vital that your troops, your sons and daughters, are now being killed in Afghanistan and Iraq? And if IPAC has its way, there is a strong possibility of the United States being sucked into a war with Iran on Israel's behalf. And we should not forget the embedded lie, Iran's illicit nuclear program. Nothing has been proved to be illicit about Iran's nuclear program, but the people who write for IPAC do not bother with qualifying words like suspected or alleged. They come right out with Iran's illicit nuclear program. And one cannot help but wonder how many more lives may be lost because of that lie. But never would they dare to mention Israel's clear and present nuclear capability of at least 200 nuclear weapons and their means of delivery. Nor do they mention the not unreasonable proposition that Iran has a right to defend itself and to support other like-minded groups in its own region. After all, the United States has hundreds of thousands of military personnel as well as clandestine operatives in a region which is not exactly on its own doorstep. And please, spare me the claims that Iran's president threatened to wipe Israel off the map, as repeated by then-Senator Obama to keep IPAC happy.
Its president denies the Holocaust and threatens to wipe Israel off the map.
The wipe Israel off the map lie had been thoroughly debunked at least 2 years before Obama repeated it. In fact, the word Israel was not mentioned in that section of the speech. Quoting the late Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini, President Ahmadinejad said, "This regime occupying Jerusalem must vanish from the page of time." Farsi was the language of Omar Khayyam, the great Persian mathematician, philosopher, astronomer, physician, and poet, and I cannot resist reading one of his verses. The moving finger writes, and having writ, moves on. Nor all your piety nor wit shall lure it back to cancel half a line, nor all your tears wash out a word of it. The poem has meanings on all kinds of levels, about our words and deeds being permanent, a kind of cosmic record which can never be erased, and world leaders who regularly use lies and half-truths to advance their agendas should take note of it. So should those who vote for them. It has been pointed out by Persian scholars that the equivalent of wiping anything off a map simply does not exist in this most poetic of languages. But it is not at all fanciful to suggest that the equivalent of this expression exists in most languages. The idea is so common and well understood, it is idiomatic, Less used, but just as understandable, is the expression, "banish from the page of time." No honest translator could claim that the idiom, "nothing lasts forever," could possibly mean, "I am going to kill you," or that the idiom, "banish from the page of time," could possibly mean, "wipe Israel off the map." But it suits Israel to perpetuate the myth, and what suits Israel suits IPAC. And where IPAC leads, Congress, and yes, the President of the United States, must follow, if they all know what's good for them. And President Obama certainly did at his very first press conference in the White House.
Mr. President, do you know of any country in the Middle East that has nuclear weapons?
With respect to nuclear weapons, I don't want to speculate. What I know is this.
Of course, he did not answer the question to which everyone else knows the answer. But since then, he has done nothing but speculate about Iran's nuclear program.
Iran is breaking rules that all nations must follow.
All nations, that is, except Israel.
We have made it clear that we will do our part to engage the Iranian government on the basis of mutual interest and mutual respect, but our patience is not unlimited. This is not about singling out Iran. This is not about creating double standards.
Technically, you are correct, Mr. President, because the double standards were created long ago. What you are doing is attempting to ensure that they are maintained, and that is one of IPAC's main aims. In this graphic, the orange represents the population of the United States, approximately 310 million citizens, while the P represents the membership of IPAC, a mere 100,000 people. This is a pressure group whose clearly stated aims and ambitions put the interests of Israel above and beyond any other consideration, which really means that IPAC is, to all intents and purposes, the voice of America. And only when the voices of the majority of United States citizens are heard will this gross imbalance be redressed. Send emails or get on the phone to your representatives and tell them how you feel about your taxes propping up the illegal apartheid state of Israel, for the sake of yourselves, your families, and yes, the rest of us. Please take America back. A nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and he carries his banners openly. But the traitor moves among those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the galleys, heard in the very hall of government itself. For the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in the accent familiar to his victims, and wears their face and their garment, and he appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown to undermine the pillars of a city. He infects the body politic so that it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to be feared. In IPAC, The Voice of America, Part 1, we saw how an extremely small minority of people, many of them dual citizens, are exercising a grotesquely disproportionate amount of power over the American Congress, because 100,000 people represents a mere 0.032% of America's total population. As the Declaration of Independence rightly implies, there are certain truths which are self-evident. And one of those truths is that America's support for a very small nation, Israel, is way out of proportion to the interests of its own population, as well as to the interests of world peace. It is also self-evident that lying, blatant favoritism, vote-buying, bribery and corruption, and much else that is underhand and criminal have constituted a seeping scourge within the United States for at least the past half century, and the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty is a striking example of the suppression of the public's right to know what is really going on. In the January 16, 2004 edition of Stars and Stripes, the late Admiral Thomas Mora, former commander of the U.S. 7th Fleet, wrote the following. On June 8, 1967, Israel attacked our proud naval ship, the USS Liberty, killing 34 American servicemen and wounding 172. Those men were then betrayed and left to die by our own government. Israeli reconnaissance aircraft closely studied the Liberty during an 8-hour period prior to the attack, one flying within 200 feet of the ship. Weather reports confirm the day was clear with unlimited visibility. The Liberty was a clearly marked American ship in international waters, flying an American flag and carrying large U.S. Navy hull letters and numbers on its bow. U.S. military rescue aircraft were recalled not once, but twice, through direct intervention by the Johnson administration. Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara's cancellation of the Navy's attempt to rescue the Liberty, which I confirmed from the commanders of the aircraft carriers America and Saratoga, was the most disgraceful act I witnessed in my entire military career. To add insult to injury, Congress, to this day, has failed to hold formal hearings on Israel's attack on this American ship. A little over 34 years later, this extraordinary interview took place. 5 Israelis had been detained in New York for acting suspiciously following the 9/11 attacks. But, unconditionally freed by the FBI and back in Israel 10 weeks later, one of them had this to say on live TV.
Our purpose was to document the event.
To document an event that took America and the rest of the world totally by surprise? And the same dark forces that let Israel off the hook time and again were at work when a substantial majority of the United States Congress felt obliged to sign letters pledging their support for Israel when the United States Vice President was virtually slapped in the face with a wet fish by Tel Aviv over the building of housing for Israelis in illegally occupied East Jerusalem. And the congressional letters of support actually followed the insult. It was like a bunch of supplicants saying, "Hit me again, insult me all you like, it makes no difference, I am your friend." So what's going on? Here's one highly probable scenario, which I've called the treasonous dollar drain, engineered by IPAC. Every year, loyal U.S. citizens dutifully pay their federal taxes, which are then used for many purposes, one of which is to supply aid in various forms to Israel, currently estimated at being about $3 billion per year. Some of this aid is used to buy U.S.-made weapons, which allow Israel to continuously threaten its neighbors and enables them to finance the hugely expensive apartheid wall, effectively fencing off the Palestinians and making them prisoners in their own land. It is self-evident that some of this money is bound to find its way back to the United States to be used to top up the election campaign funds for politicians, who, when elected, will be very keen to vote even more aid to Israel next time around. So, not only are American taxes being used to support the apartheid state of Israel, some of that money is being used to help elect candidates who are more interested in getting re-elected than they are in America's best interests, which means that Americans are actually paying for the demise of their own democracy. Yet democracy is something which successive U.S. presidents have been crying out is a basic right for everyone on the planet. What hypocrisy! It doesn't much matter which candidate wins, Democrat or Republican, or at what level, congressperson, senator, vice president, or president. He or she, having taken the proverbial 30 pieces of silver, is now expected to do IPAC's bidding. The penalty for not doing so being the withholding of campaign funds when the next election circus comes to town. It is estimated that up to November 2008, about $114 billion have been contributed by Americans to Israel. And what has America seen for that money? Absolutely nothing. Quite the reverse. The constant tensions in the Middle East, extending through Afghanistan to Pakistan, mean a growing threat to all American citizens because of their president's likelihood to continuously escalate the warlike attitude and threats against any nation in that area which Israel says is a threat to them, Iran being the nation currently in Israel's hate sights, and one cannot help but wonder which nation in that troubled region might be next. The price of AIPAC's stranglehold on the United States is virtually immeasurable, and if Israel has its way, and through AIPAC, succeeds in its push for a war against Iran, that immeasurable price could escalate to include the devastation caused by a Third World War. It really is time for Americans to wake up and to think about the unthinkable, and to do something about taking their country back from the foreign power, Israel, which is insidiously, through AIPAC, calling the shots in the United States Congress, the Senate, and yes, in the White House itself.